from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net bonus podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
I'm Carissa Hendricks.
Did you like the way I put emphasis on the bonus? You know, this is episode 101.
101!
This is where you get schooled. And actually, it's kind of funny because today we're going to talk about... We're going to try to school people who keep writing horrible articles, obviously not understanding what atheism is or what it's all about or whatever. This will be the main... Because you know what I've realized over the past couple of weeks... Almost all the articles that I've been writing are refuting things that I just think are completely and utterly retarded.
So let me get this straight. So you've decided to school people in the episode that they'll never hear.
Yeah, but then they'll never read my articles either. There's a better chance of them actually hearing this than reading it, just judging by the numbers.
All right.
There is a slight percent. There is a slight chance that someone who wrote that crappy article may chance upon the podcast.
Yeah, but this is the bonus podcast.
That's true, although there are quite a few listeners, still many bonus members, so hopefully they can take the lessons of the show and spread the word, as you see.
Use them to comment on the posts of stupid, stupid, religious, stupid heads.
Right. Well, thank you for putting it so eloquently. I would have probably said, you know, articles written from a deep-seated ignorance, but your stupid, stupid head... it's a little more poignant.
I'm a bit tired.
We are both a little bit tired. We've been adjusting our sleep schedule. Our new apartment has massive windows. And I mean massive. And because it's pretty high up in the sky, there's really no other buildings to block it. Except for maybe the Calgary Tower, which looks a little bit like the Space Needle in Seattle. Except for I think it's much shorter.
Because it's considerably shorter, yeah.
Every fucking other building around here is crazy taller. It's like a running joke in this city.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you guys have a small dick in Calgary. That's all I'm saying.
It's not that we have a small dick. It's just that everybody else builds their dicks much taller. So, yeah.
Well, you know what? It's okay. The CN Tower is an eyesore anyways. And does anybody even... I think they were filing for bankruptcy, CN.
Really?
A little while ago. Not that it's owned by CN anymore, but yeah. Canadian National Railways. They had some kind of strikes or whatever. Hey, welcome to the world where of underfunding.
Anyway, so because we get the morning sun in our windows first thing in the morning, because we are east-facing, so we get that first blast of morning sun, we tend to wake up pretty early around here, and our bodies are not used to it, so
definitely.
We're not getting a lot of sleep quite yet.
No, and plus, I don't quite like the mattress that we have right now. Air while we... Try to find a bed that's within our budget. And you know, you never realize until you start, you run probably in the second week of crappy sleep, how much you actually rely on good sleep to function.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to fucking get by.
I've been pretty grumpy lately. You've been very tolerant of my snappy, bitchy.
I'm even shocked. Like, you've actually never been like this before.
Never. Pretty bitchy.
You were pretty fucking bitchy. Like, it doesn't take much for you to be like, you're stepping on my stuff. And you're like, all right, easy now. or sort of like you make suggestions about how the place should be set up. And I'll say something like, well, I don't know. And you'd be like, you're not being very helpful. And I'm like, I see.
I'm usually so bubbly. I think you're just not used to it.
Bitchy Carissa?
Bitchy Carissa.
Well, hopefully on the podcast it'll end up, you know, working to our advantage.
That's true.
I'd like for you to channel that into the podcast.
You
as
don't
want to. Me.
No, you what? Don't want to. Because bitchy Carissa has nothing positive to contribute to the whole world.
Is that right?
That's why I keep her under lock and key. That's why after 3 years in our relationship, you've just met her recently at full force.
Ah, I see. Should I be. Is that full force, though? Because it's still pretty manageable.
I think that is full force.
Yeah?
I don't know if I've ever been too much bitchier than that.
Well, not to my knowledge. But again, you said it yourself. It's a very, very segmented part of yourself that has only come out due to lack of sleep.
Well, and I think it's lack of sleep, and then also it's still, we don't have the internet. And, you know, like I said, like we were saying in the last show, nothing isolates more than not having the internet for somebody of my generation.
Oh, yeah, particularly you, because I mean,
oh,
I was
so
I only got
on
into
me.
The internet when I was like in my 20s, Really?
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm young enough that the internet has been part of my social network and my sense of self and my
career.
Entertainment and my career since I was little. And to not have it for weeks has been horrible. Oh, my God. It's so bad.
Yeah. Slowly trying to fix that situation.
And I think 2 days. I think we're going to have it in 2 days. Because we got a cell phone today. So because that was the problem. We couldn't. We couldn't buzz in the internet guy.
Yeah, the internet people. They don't take any. Like, they're like royalty. If you do not placate to them, they'll just leave.
Yeah. So we went and bought a cell phone. Actually, we bought the cell phone We bought the SIM card yesterday, but it doesn't work in either of our phones. So we actually had to go buy a cell phone today.
Well, it turns out that the reason it didn't work for the phone is that I have a very old iPhone. Like, we're talking 2G here. And, that doesn't work with many of the networks now. That phone is obsolete. Oh, my goodness. I never thought that would actually happen from a sophisticated piece of technology. But lo and behold, that's how quickly technology can become obsolete.
You know
Holy
what
shit.
I love, though? Every time you whip out your phone, there's this bit of reverence in the room because everyone's like, oh, my God, is that the first ever iPhone? Can I touch it?
I know. Seriously. Isn't that weird?
Well, because we're in Canada. They didn't release them here. So most people have never seen the first generation of iPhone. And they're like, oh, it's so heavy. Wow, look at it. Wow, look how amazing it is. It's true, though. I mean, actually, the first generation of iPhone was better than the second generation of iPhone because the second generation was much more breakable. It's the same thing with the flip cameras. You know those flips?
Yeah, yeah.
The one that we never got in Canada, the one that didn't get released in Canada, I got one. I had one special ordered, and then they had to ship it to a U.S. address who shipped it to me. I got it special for my birthday.
Oh, you're special.
I'm so special. And when the regular flip came out and I saw one of them in Canada, I was shocked. They're nowhere near as good as the original. They're way lighter. They feel cheaper in your hand.
Yeah, but that's only because they're lighter. I mean, there's that.
No, they are crappier.
I'm just saying that typically, if you want to make any product that you have appear to be higher quality, you just put weights in it. This is no joke. This is a real phenomenon of human beings. If something's too light, you think it's cheap. So maybe part of it is maybe.
That could have been part of it. I think also part of it was that on the other flip, there was like metal sides, and you didn't have to put batteries in it. It all plugged in and charged via USB, and the whole thing was very compact and functional, and it was really durable. Like, I remember stepping on it a couple times, and it was fine, and then the new flip was just like plasticky and cheap, and you had to put batteries in it, and the whole thing felt cheap.
Yeah. Well, I guess that, sometimes with technology like that, you can change manufacturers and all of a sudden the quality does.
I do think that's what it was.
Does fucking dip. Now, before we start the show, there is something else that I wanted to mention. Because of our lack of internet, we've been using a lot more public internet at the libraries around Calgary.
So I don't know, have you even ever had a library card?
I did. I had a library card in Montreal. They have this really big library called the Bibliothèque Nationale. And it's a very beautiful building. Of course, they had English books, but not as much as they had French books. So guess who wasn't going there, really?
Right.
Because there was no need.
See, I used to have a library card. I used to be really dedicated to the library because lots of my friends actually worked there. And I lived by some really nice fancy branches up in the fancier areas of Calgary, and I had my library card. But since I moved down to Inglewood, I had my card, but I kind of let it, you know, for the last 2 years we've been on the road, so I kind of let it expire
and
whatever.
You let it slide.
I let it slide. So we went and each got ourselves a library card here in Calgary, and we've been using it to take out movies, as we said before, so that we have some kind of entertainment when we get back home.
I know, it feels like it's back to the Blockbuster days.
It is a bit, but it's a free Blockbuster.
Yeah, your library is now your Blockbuster.
But because we live right downtown, we go to the big downtown library. And there's something very interesting about the big downtown library in the middle of the day,
Saturday.
In the middle of the day, Monday to Friday, which is when we go, is that the library's full of homeless, crazy people.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how to say that nicely, because, I mean, I don't want to be rude about it, but they are people sitting in the corner reading Clifford the Big Red Dog, mumbling to themselves in dirty urine-soaked coats. Like, it's...
And there was
it's
this
bothersome.
One there was this one guy, the one day I forgot my headphones. Well, you forgot your headphones, but I gave them to you. And
what a gentleman!
I am a gentleman. Thank you. Anyways, well, because you love watching your videos, anyways. So I couldn't hear anything distracting. But and if you don't have headphones on, this is when you realize how many fucking crazy people there is around. And there was this one guy today. I swear to God, he was like minutes away from touching himself. It just seemed like he wanted, like he was all, like his hand was like all tappy on his upper thigh kind of thing when he was excited. And I just felt like, is this about to get rated R here? And I guess it's because we live in downtown Calgary and it's a particular time of year, but wow, like even in Montreal, which is a serious homeless problem, your crazies come downtown. Our crazies are pretty spread out. They normally end up being like, in far off sections. But here, it's just fucking right in your face downtown.
Okay, well, here's what happens in Calgary, people. So if, for anybody coming to Calgary, the time you want to come visit downtown would be right during or after the Stampede. Because what happens, and other Calgarians can tune in on the show if there's any members, because they will know this is exactly what happens. It's kind of this unspoken thing that only people who live here know about. But what happens is that in the winter, we do have a lot of homeless shelters, but the homeless tend to go up into the sort of suburb areas and sort of hide up there in the winter and stay at the shelter. So we have good tabs on them. But right after that, when it starts to warm up, all the homeless people move downtown because we have a couple...
That's where the money is.
Well, yes, it's where all the business people are. They can panhandle, and we do have this really great mustard seed downtown.
Which is literally a block away from our house.
It's about a block and a half, 2 blocks from our house.
Yay!
The mustard seed is not the problem.
No, obviously.
And so we end up with a lot of the more disabled style handicapped people downtown. Now, what happens is that when the Stampede comes into town, which is in July, a couple weeks before that, the local police start really cracking down on the homeless downtown in Calgary. Because what they want to do is they want to clean up the city for all the tourists who come down during the Stampede. And during the Stampede, all the tourists are mostly downtown, and because that's where the Stampede is, right? The Stampede Park is basically right downtown.
The Stampede is coming to our house.
Yeah, it's gonna be loud here, sweetie, for about a week.
Oh, like it's not loud when we got the fucking Calgary Tower that's going to chime any moment now that people are going to probably fucking hear. And a train that passes right below us.
Under our building.
The first day we got here, Carissa's reaction is like, I don't know if we can live here. This train is so loud.
But you get used to it really fast. And when the windows are closed, it's actually quite quiet.
It's okay. I wouldn't say it's quite quiet. Because I think that you don't really understand what quiet is. I don't think you've actually... I mean, remember when we were in Prince Albert there in Saskatchewan? That's not the country, okay? The country is loud with animals yelling all the time. That's what the country is. You got birds yelling. You got fucking crickets yelling. You got frogs yelling. All of them are yelling. And that's what you're hearing, the sounds of nature. Just a whole bunch of yellers. Fucking making themselves known because they're trying to get laid. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's what's happening. Somebody's trying to get fucked, and they're just yelling themselves out there. They're putting themselves out there. In the city, the same thing happens, but it's people in Trans-Ams that are sort of blasting their music.
Or crazy people trying really hard not to touch themselves in public libraries.
Yeah, it's very, very hard, especially when Clifford the Red Dog,
Was also a gentleman behind you that was talking quite loudly to his friend, and another gentleman who was clearly very... well-dressed professional shushed him.
Ooh,
and the man was going to beat him up. The
get
other
the fuck out
crazy
of here.
Man. Yeah, the librarian. You didn't even notice, but the librarian had to walk over and say and ask them both to
calm the fuck down.
Calm the fuck down. And she even said he was like, "What are you doing? Why are you still standing here?" And she said, "I'm waiting to see which one of you is going to stand up and punch the other." Is what
get
she
out
said.
Of here. She
yeah,
said
it was and there was the table right behind you. Your headphones must have been on pretty loud. You didn't even notice.
Well, I had no choice. There was fucking Clifford the Red Dog masturbator there. That was just waiting to fucking go off. And I'm trying to concentrate here. I'm trying to do some research. It's like, yeah, I'm going to put up this sound so high that the quality of the sound is now just totally distorted. I can hear some hissing and fizzing, but it's better than the insanity around us.
You know what's weird is I can't decide if it's just worse now at that library or if I just never noticed it before, because I used to go to that library quite a bit downtown.
But did you hang out, like, because we go to the most public area. It's right
That's
beside
true.
The movies, right?
Yeah.
So, of course, there are going to be, like, other poor, annoying people that are going to go there. I'm just perpetually surprised by the fact that someone who gets shushed at a library is turning violent Is this your first time at a fucking library, sir? The shush is a greeting. You walk in and they should probably tell you to shush. You're like, hello, shh. Exactly. Quiet.
This is a fucking library.
Yeah, no, that's surprising. Okay, let's talk about the topic I want to mention, only because in the past week I have been writing nothing but rebuttal articles to terrible pieces of writing on the web that are basically, well, the best way I could describe it is like articles that have a complete lack of understanding when it comes to atheism. And what I thought we could do is do the top 10 biggest misconceptions or fallacies that are mentioned in some of these articles, just because that will be satisfying to me. I feel like I can just summarize every fucking article and say, like, I need to stop writing rebuttals now, because that's all it's going to be, and that's pretty boring. I should probably mention other important news.
Yeah. So this is our Atheism 101 episode. Top 10. And they're all kind of misconceptions about atheism. It's sort of the way that we've decided to phrase things.
For the 101 episode.
For the 101 episode.
Okay, the first up, number one, and this is probably the one you'll hear most often, is that atheism is a religion. So I've actually heard agnostics or even some other atheists make this claim, okay? Now, there's a number of reasons why people make that claim. First of all, I think it's because of the growth of the movement in general. And because it's now a movement and there are people associated with it, there are, you know, in a sense, there are some parallels. Like, even what I do could be described in a religious sense. Like, I'm an atheist pastor, somebody could easily say. You go around and you're basically preaching about atheism.
So why would you argue that we're not a religion?
Well, there's a couple reasons for that. I mean, the most important reason is the fact that if you look at the way that religion is structured, it has nothing in common with atheism. Really, I mean, you could say, if you were to just say, have like such a broad definition of religion, you could declare that, you know, any organization is a religion. As long as you have people that are adamant about it, as long as there are people that are passionate about whatever topic that this institution is concerned in, you could argue you're a religion. But religion itself is much more complex than just an arrangement of individuals, right? There's more to it. There's a dogma. That's one of the most important things about all religion. To be associated with one religion, you have to declare fealty to whatever dogma they have. If you're a Baptist, if you're evangelical, if you're a Roman Catholic, there are specific things that you will have to believe, that you'll have to adhere to in order to be considered part of the movement. And I think that this is a huge distinction with atheism, because there really is no lemon test to be part of the movement. All it requires for you is to not believe in superstitious nonsense. Mm-hmm. That's all. Mm-hmm. That is all. That is not a qualifier, you know, in the same way that other religions make professions of faith. They'll have like things like where you will need to confess, or where you will have to be confirmed into this group, or where you need to be baptized in order to be, you know, put into this little framework. What we have is not, you know, like even if it was a movement, even if we had a group that you were signed into membership, it would be more akin to, say, the Red Cross than it would be to any religion. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that we don't have really the same behavior as religious institutions at all. Like, and I feel like most religions, they want to paint us in that corner, which is weird. You know, they're like, oh, you're just as bad as us. You know what you're saying? Like, well, you're just being as irrational as we are. First of all, no. And second of all, thank you for admitting that you're irrational.
I also think that's something pleasant. We need to think about is the structure, right? A religion is a body of believers who have some kind of formalized structure of their organization. Atheism is not an organization.
Nope.
And therefore has no structure, internal structure whatsoever. There's nothing. There's a few organizations trying to do things here or there, but there's absolutely no structure. There's nothing. We've got no leaders. We've got no simple understanding of how to rise. We've got no churches. We have no schools. We've got nothing.
Which sometimes makes you kind of like understand why our movement has so little power.
Mm-hmm.
It's, and you know, because of the way that the religious institutions are organized, a big portion of the way that they're structured is that they collect donations. They have a physical presence in reality, and we don't have this, right? Well, you could say that there are many people in the world of atheism that are extremely well respected. Say, like Richard Dawkins is a good example, or Daniel Dennett, right? And while they may speak for their own non-belief, they don't really speak for the non-belief of other people, because again, this is not a very uniting thing to disbelieve in a proposition that seems to be utterly ludicrous. And you know, in that sense, like, because of those, you know, that lack of cohesion, we don't have as much power as some of these religious organizations. I mean, like, look at the Roman Catholic Church. The Vatican has something like $80 billion of money in its bank.
Think about all of the tax breaks that religions get. I mean, you know what? If you guys want to lump us in there with religions, fine. I want to not pay taxes.
Good atheists,
please,
should not pay any fucking taxes.
I would really appreciate that. You know, we should deserve the same tax incentives. We deserve all those same rights as religion has. You know, when we say that we don't believe in God, people should feel uncomfortable arguing with us. Unfortunately, that's not what happens, because we're not a religion. We're not a religion that is recognized by the state, by people. Logically, we're not a religion. It's absolutely ridiculous to even say that.
Now, there is something, maybe there is one point, one part that may confuse people, is that I think that there is a kind of similarity between many, though not all, atheists, right? We if you were to do a survey about atheists, and there have been surveys that have been put out there, I think it's something around 70% of us would be described as very liberal, as, you know, like, very pro-gay rights, pro-choice. There's a couple factors there, but it's not universal. There's going to be atheists out there that are probably against abortion, that are very conservative and things like that, but it tends to, the majority tend to have certain attributes, which is what makes the situation a little bit complicated. Let's say when someone who is more conservative gets a very important position in the atheist movement. We'll actually be talking about that on another show. I don't want to talk about it now because it's a fairly complex issue that I don't want to mention. But I do want to say that because there tend to be certain characteristics that are similar, I think this may cause, again, some of that confusion, because many atheists will be very progressive. And as a consequence, someone could think, well, you know, you are a religion that's progressive, that's trying to sort of like fight for gay rights, that's trying to fight for women's rights and fight sexism and misogyny and all these other things.
Yeah, but you know what? You can find similarities and characters amongst people who decide to make jogging part of their lifestyle. That doesn't mean that jogging is a religion.
Well, you know, maybe some people who jog, they treat it like one. Who knows? But yeah, obviously it's not, because there's no dogma. And this is what's important when you actually mention religion. You should think about every facet of what is a religion. Because if it's just people getting together and sharing common beliefs, that's not enough, right? We can come together, share a common belief that people should not be tortured. That's called Amnesty International. They're not a religion, okay? They just share some common beliefs. We share a common disbelief, which, as strange as it may sound, in a world which is still dominated by believers, is a thing. And you know what? Like, this is on a bit of a tangent. I'm supposed to have in a couple days Peter Boghossian, who's been doing a lot of lectures about faith and things like that.
If we ever get the internet.
We will get it. We'll get it. Just believe that we're going to get it. Anyways, one of the things that he was saying
impossible.
Was that he didn't like the word atheist on an intellectual level, because he felt like, well, we don't have atheists in regards to, you know, the tooth fairy or Santa, and I don't feel like this should be a descriptor for me. I don't feel like my disbelief should give me a title. And I'm going to be arguing with him about, because he calls himself a skeptic, and I'm like, look, pal.
You are going to whip him.
I'm going to fucking destroy this argument, because my whole thing is like, I don't care if this is just an intellectual little fucking argument that you don't want to you know, be called. The identifier has now become fucking crucial.
Absolutely.
All right?
It is important. You know what? And I think that the day that we have people who are arguing for the belief in the tooth fairy, hiding people who are raping children
and rapists
and telling people not to use condoms and just crazy bullshit. Yeah, I think you would identify yourself as a tooth fairy atheist.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I remember I talked to this agnostic just a few days ago. I mean, I sat him down, we got nice and drunk, and I was just trying to get him to sort of take a fucking position. Because, you know, just a few days ago, Illinois rejected anti-bullying bill, and they needed 30 votes, and almost half of the people that could have voted it in abstained. Now, these people are just as fucking bad as the one that said nay.
Absolutely.
And this is the thing that people have to realize. You might think that you are actually doing everybody a big giant favor sitting on the fence, but you're not. You live in a world in which you kind of have to choose sides. And the argument of the agnostic guy was like, I dislike being told what I need to do, right? I'd like to be independent. I don't want to be sort of like painted into a corner and have to do all of these things as a consequence. And I'm like, well, you know what? You're a selfish little piece of shit being like that. Oh, you don't like that. Well, that's too bad, because you live in a world in which it's about conflicting forces. It's not about this weird neutrality that you think is admirable. It's not, okay? If you're not on one side, then in a way you're contributing to whatever side is winning. And guess what side's winning, genius? Not ours, okay? We still have a fucking Reason rally event and 10 to 15,000 people show up. Hasidic Jews to fucking debate whether or not the internet should happen have 60,000 people show up. Like, if they want to really flex their muscles, they can crush us. Why? Because so many, like, more than half, probably even double the amount of people that call themselves atheists are on the fucking fence. We could use them. And the whole idea that, oh, I don't like to be painted in these corners. Well, I'm fucking sorry that you don't want to be painted in the corner, but guess how you're going to be painted anyways? I mean, if you're on the agnostic fence, a religious believer thinks that you're on theirs. But it's a fucking lie. You're actually on our side and you're doing nothing for us. Thanks a lot. Why don't you have some fucking guts and do something about it? That's all I'm going to say about that one. You want to move on to the second part?
I think we probably should. Otherwise, this is going to be a two-hour show.
Okay. number two, atheists are uneducated or undereducated about religion. So I see this quite a bit. It's sort of like this idea that we don't understand the mysteries of religion, therefore we come at it from a position of, you know, we're not theologians, so therefore we can't really understand the higher portions of a religion.
Well, I can speak from my perspective of being somebody who used to be religious and came into atheism. When you feel that your faith is evaporating, at least for me and for most of the other people I've talked to who used to be big believers, like, I loved me some Jesus. I loved me hard some Jesus.
I just don't even understand what that's like.
Oh, God, it was so awesome.
What was Jesus like? Was he your best friend?
Yeah, you were never alone. You were never alone. Everything made sense, and there was a reason for everything.
You're like, Jesus wanted me to do this.
Jesus and me, we were friends. We were buds. And you always felt like you had a little special power over situations, because, you know, I always saved up my favors. I never asked Jesus for much, and I felt like that way when I really wanted something, I could ask, and he'd be like, well, this little girl, she doesn't ask for much. I'll give her whatever she wants. You know, I was always really careful what I asked for.
I see. Well, you're pragmatic in belief as you are unbelief, my dear.
But what I'm saying is that, you know, as a non-believer now, when I felt my grasp slipping on religion, my first thing that I did was I delved into the text and into the research. And I went to Catholic school. I did my Bible study. I did all that stuff. And from talking to a lot of other people in my position, people who were, I mean, Julia Sweeney's Letting Go of God, One Woman Play, talking
That's
to lots of other people personally.
Fucking, like, a get this audiobook, people.
Oh, so good. A lot of people have had the same experience. If when you're religious and you feel like you're losing it, you study even harder. And you know what? The harder you study, the more holes you see. So it is unreasonable to think that, oh, you just don't understand the text. Fuck you. I understood that text until none of it made sense anymore. Okay?
Well, there's another aspect to it as well. As I would say that in that argument, how many people actually believe in the theology of sophisticated theologians? Mm. Like, no one comparatively, none of them. This is not the populist beliefs, okay? And even, like, some of the authors that were debating this idea that atheists are undereducated. In fact, one of the articles that I wrote was I had a great quote. I'm trying to remember it now because we don't have the internet. But basically, you know, this person, I don't know if it was a man or a woman, was arguing that, you know, well, you should study religion more. And then all of a sudden they went on a diatribe about how most religions are obsessed with sin or fallen people. I'm like, have you never read the history of religion? This is a comparatively recent thing. This is mostly a Judeo-Christian thing. Sin and fallen and all these other kinds of things were not obsessions of the ancient religious world, okay? These are not things that people worried about. The relationship you had with gods in the ancient world was really a kind of pragmatic thing. Okay, you believe in this god, you sacrifice this, he makes sure that your crops are okay, and if they're not, then maybe you fucked up and you got to figure out what you did. And then sometimes you were given powers by these things. This is essentially a very pragmatic affair. Anybody who's ever played, say, Dungeons and Dragons could definitely understand this was the way that the ancient world viewed it. Like, if I was a priest of Baal would give me certain powers. Right? And it was in a polytheistic world with many gods, this is going to be your arrangement with it. You're not going to be worried about your sins or how you've done wrong. Look, these are relatively recent religious ideas. So even somebody who would just mention that, they don't understand religion. And when you're trying to make a case saying the world needs religion, you're only still looking at it from this Judeo-Christian perspective. Like, does the world need Zoroastrianism? Did the world need Mithraism? I don't even know how to say it.
So what specifically would you say to somebody who was saying that, oh, well, atheists, they just don't understand the text. They just don't understand enough to believe in Jesus.
Jesus? Well, I would say that, you know, the easiest rebuttal would probably come from believers themselves. I mean, I was reading many of the comments of these types of articles with someone saying, how dare you think that I don't understand. It's like they went through the very same thing you did, just trying to delve into it, to understand, to find out what they, you know, what they didn't understand. Because when a person starts religious and then moves towards atheism, there was this earnestness about their desire to keep their faith, right? This is the thing about faith. It's a really powerful incentives. You want to keep it because when you lose it, it's gone, mm-hmm. right? It's not going to come back. So you're going to hold on to it for as long as possible. In fact, you will have lost it way before you admit to losing it. Because you never even really you never fully understood what faith was until you kind of took it away and realized, this is just me not knowing something.
Well, and part of the problem is that lots of people are arguing for this idea that, well, religion gives you comfort and religion gives you a sense of security and purpose in life. And yes, it does. But that in no way proves that it is correct. You know what? Believing that I myself am an oracle would probably also give me those feelings. But then I would be fucking nutsballs and I wouldn't be able to participate in regular intelligent society. So I don't indulge myself in that ridiculous delusion.
Well, I'm just going to say that if you look at most, like the most recent poll that surveyed the religious understanding of, you know, atheists, Jews, Christians, Muslims, and all kinds of religion, found that atheists were the most educated.
Mm.
That is the finding.
So this is empirically wrong, this comment.
That is completely
factually
empirically wrong.
Incorrect.
It is factually incorrect. We tend to have a much better understanding of religion than very religious people. Because the religious people, they don't need to know these things. They just go to church, they're told what they need to know. And then they're like, well, I'm very religious. Have you ever read the Bible? And I mean the entire Bible. I don't just mean the passages that somebody told you that you should read. And, you know, speaking as someone who's reading it, I can understand why someone would put it down. Because, you know, it's, let's say a good example.
Boring.
I was just reading from Joshua to Judges. And guess what? The end of Joshua is like the beginning of Judges. Great. I want to reread this entire list of places that you claim that you conquered, which you didn't. So, yeah, like, what a fucking fascinating bit of reading.
I remember reading the Bible and feeling like it was written by, like, remember when you were little, like really little, and did you ever keep a diary when you were really little?
Nah.
I used to keep a diary when I was really little, and I got rid of them when I, you know, got rid of all my stuff and tried to live out of the suitcase. But I remember rereading a few passages, and it sounded kind of like the Bible, where it's like, and then I hung out with Sally, and then I hung out with Henry, and then I hung out with Andrew, and then I hung out with Jacob, and then I hung out with, and then I hung out, and they all were friends. And so while I was hanging out with Sally, and while I was hanging out, and
no,
it's just like,
that out. Jesus.
There is no substance to it sometimes. It's just rambling. It just feels like some of it's just filling pages, practicing their cursive. Some of it's so fucking boring.
Well, you know, here's when reading the Bible is like trying to understand that a person would rewrite history to make sense to them, right? And one of the most important things, like for instance, let me use the Joshua and Judges as a perfect fucking example, right? You read Joshua, which I hope in a couple of like weeks I'm going to do a Bible stories about Joshua. Although I might have to combine it with something else because Joshua's pretty fucking short. Once you realize that it is essentially a list of conquests, so they, you know, and they will name every single king, every single city that they tried to conquer, and so on and so forth. Now, when you look at it through the lens of history rather than looking at it through the lens of religion, you realize that one of the things, like one of the reasons why they were writing this is because, well, they inhabited these lands and they want to have a narrative understanding of the things that happened. Like, for instance, from the time of Joshua to the book of Judges, by Joshua, they've got all of this conquered land and they're just like, yay, God is awesome and he just gave us all these things and they all promise with Joshua that we're going to love Yahweh as our only God and smash idols. And then what happens? Well, in Judges, a couple of people start worshiping Baal again. But all of that is meant to explain the fact that they get their asses kicked. And then they start losing. And then they're not having, you know, they're not gaining grounds anymore. It must have been because they turned their back against God, right?
You're giving away the story, sweetie.
No, I'm not. It has nothing to do with Joshua.
All right.
There's plenty to talk about with the character. But my point is,
you're getting way up to
when you're trying to stylize this, you know, history in a sense. Like you're trying to make sense of it through a religious lens. You're going to have like this redactionist kind of like blah, blah, blah. This happened. Because you got to cover those parts. It's like when they were trying to cover all of the Bagats. Right, they're trying to explain the tribes of Israel because for them these tribes actually, you know, they have some though, you know, some historical significance, though not what you read in the Bible. It's just that this is the most stylized version of it. Try to imagine if you were writing a stylized version of modern history from the perspective that you're one group who is pretty much the big fucking loser in that history. How would you write it? And how would it sound like 2,000 fucking years later when a whole bunch of people have had their fucking hands on that shit, copying and recopying? What's it going to be like?
Yeah.
Obviously, probably boring and messed up and, like, not very interesting. Why would you care what happened in some fucking region of the world that didn't seem to matter, but you just had some people that were living there? So you needed to explain what happened to them. And you're like, well, the reason all those people got killed is they started worshiping another god. That's what happened. That's why they lost that war. Yeah, no, I don't think so. But whatever makes you fucking happy, right?
All right, so what have we covered so far?
Okay, well, we've only covered two. Let's move on to the third one.
Which ones have we covered, though?
We covered atheism as religion, and atheists are undereducated about religion.
Okay.
So I think we've both destroyed these two arguments. Let's move on to the third one, which might be a little bit harder to debate. The third one is atheists are arrogant. Now,
well, we're arrogant.
I'm an arrogant person.
I'm also arrogant.
So I don't know if I can properly defend this, but I will say that anytime a person accuses you of arrogance, they're not telling you that you're wrong.
It's true.
That's the most important thing.
You're proud of being correct.
It's like you could stand to be a little bit more meek.
Although, you know what I would say is that I think the atheists like you and I who have the balls, because I think in this climate, in this religious climate, you have to have some balls to wander around saying, you're a fucking moron, which is basically what we're doing. And I think religious people obviously really feel threatened by that and feel like those religious people are very arrogant. But what did you and I learn from going to religious events or going to atheist events is that most atheists that we've met are kind of cute, nerdy, quiet,
very, very quiet,
humble, sweet little people.
Yeah,
so I don't agree with this comment because I have met a lot of the atheists in our community and they are some very sweet, quiet, meek little people and they're very wonderful to be around, but they are by no means arrogant. I think it's just that the loud ones are arrogant. But, I mean, I would also say that the loud religious people are arrogant. That's just kind of how it works.
I would actually say if you were to compare the arrogance of a non-believer and the arrogance of a believer, I would still say regardless of the pronunciations of the non-believer, the believer will be more arrogant. Because this person believes that things without evidence are just as good as evidence.
I think they're more arrogant because they believe that the whole universe is created because... to take care of humans.
Yeah.
And
the universe was created for us specifically. I'm like, look, the universe is so unimaginably big.
And if they pray to an infinite deity, he will change his entire plan to suit their needs.
Yeah, those two things are unbelievably arrogant.
So yes, I would agree that I am arrogant. I wouldn't agree that most atheists are arrogant. But I would also say that, you know, I am rubber and you are glue. What you say to me bounces off and sticks to you.
Wow, that's a good argument. I think I'm going to use that. No, I don't think so. Okay, look, let's say that's
where we're going with it.
The atheist, let's say, spokespeople are arrogant.
Yes.
I'm a spokesperson. I am arrogant.
I am
Richard
also arrogant.
Dawkins is arrogant. Christopher Hitchens was arrogant. But, you know, at least in the former two, was there any reason to think that they should not be a little bit arrogant?
No, they were some pretty awesome people.
They were pretty fucking awesome people. Well, one is still with us.
Right.
I know you're just, what does he have, 1 foot in the grave? He seems pretty healthy to me.
You got me talking that way.
I see. No, it was the Christopher Hitchens thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, still feeling the pain of that one.
I am too. Yeah. It hurts.
You know, I almost quit when he died. Like, that was one of the reasons.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, that's the day the cool died. The cool died. I'm like, who's going to be the next one? It ain't going to be me. I don't want that pressure. And I don't want to debate other people. That ain't my bag. I prefer to do the show, write the articles and the book, and you can do with it as you please. You can do with it as you please, but I don't want to
be... We only got three horsemen.
I know. And I mean, like, I'm still surprised Daniel Dennett's alive. Fucking Santa Claus is still alive. Like, I've seen him in person. He's a jolly fat fellow with a big red face. You just think he's waiting for a heart attack.
I was kind of hoping that when we lost Christopher Hitchens, James Randi would step more deliberately into that fourth role.
No, he can't. He's already on death's door.
I know, but I was hoping he'd try.
You know, we have to go actually visit him, because if you want to see him in person...
Oh, I want to so bad. I worship him. I do.
For many reasons. Right? The magician thing, the non-believer thing.
Well, and his whole history is brilliantly interesting. Okay, we've only hit three. Let's do another one.
Okay, let's move on to the next
one.
It's
going to be a three-hour show.
Atheists or Satanists? Now, this one's very silly. This one is just so silly that I don't even know if we should mention it. But it pops up every once in a while.
It comes out quite a bit. Honestly, I see it a lot. Like, or even if it's not said that, atheists or Satanists, the imagery. The imagery is always like evil red, you know, red-faced. Ugh, Jesus.
It's just annoying because you're kind of like, why would we choose to believe in something just as stupid as God?
Well, not only that, but the whole concept of Satanism surprises me, because it's like, okay, so they believe in the literal interpretation of the text of the Bible. They just believe in the losing team. Why? Why?
Well, no, Satanists don't actually... A real Satanist is actually... The best way I can describe it is someone who is... what's the word I'm looking for? They're just all about themselves, essentially. They're egotists. So they just think that a person should be trying to be, you know, reach gratification or whatever. There's no real... like, the mention of Satanism is a kind of joke, right?
Mm.
It's not... They're not praying to a devil or anything else like that. It's just the height of hedonism is what it is.
Well,
Satanists
then,
are hedonists.
Well, then maybe some atheists are Satanists. If it's just about hedonism.
Actually, to be honest, there I have seen not many, but a few Satanists who would identify themselves as atheists, and that does not contradict it. Just because it is a hedonistic philosophy. If you want to understand a Satanist, understand someone who basically... believes that the ethical slut is, you know, awesome. Drinking, drugs, all of these things are the fucking bomb. and that you should only be living really for yourself. It's almost like an objectivist.
You are really selling this real well, by the way.
I am. I should be a Satanist.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I can't, though. It's going to really hurt my reputation.
All right.
As an atheist.
Well, okay, so in response to this very silly comment, maybe. Maybe a lot of atheists are Satanists.
I would say that
maybe
some
they don't
could
even
be.
Know. Yeah, maybe I'm a Satanist that I don't even know, because that all sounds pretty good to me.
You are a hedonist. I will
a
say
little
this.
Bit.
A little bit of a hedonist.
I'm not necessarily a hedonist. I indulge in decadence. There's
yeah,
something
hedonism,
about decadence. Oh, I just love
that's
it.
That's why you're a hedonist.
I just love it. I seek out decadence in everything.
You're a Satanist. Carissa is a Satanist, everybody.
Well,
atheists are all Satanists.
this is somebody's going to clip that quote.
Yeah?
And you're going to be in trouble.
I doubt it. You know, I was asking people if they wanted to take part in the essentials, and I got the same response I got from everybody else, which
it's
was
all
like,
good.
It blends into one another. I don't know which ones I picked. Jeez, guys. Jeez. Like, that's either the biggest compliment or the fucking worst criticism in the world.
It's all the same.
It's like, it's all the same. Well, I hope that all the same means good. But think about it from the perspective that you've never heard the show. Come on. There's got to be some shows. Like, I'm having the same trouble here. Okay, everybody? You got to help me out. I'm trying to pick the essentials, and I just don't want to do it. Look, I don't want to listen to 300 shows.
Okay, next point. Moving on.
Okay. Point number five, atheists should acknowledge that the world is a better place because of religion. And I've heard this quite a few times, like sort of like saying, well, maybe atheists are right, but if religion was to disappear tomorrow, then the world would actually be a more terrible place. This one argument, I'm trying to remember exactly the way it was phrased, but basically said that if tomorrow religion was going to disappear, it wouldn't eliminate all wars around the world, and it wouldn't suddenly instigate, you know, 100% peace. And my only response to that is saying, like, look, I've never heard one atheist that said that if religion disappears tomorrow, the whole world we'll be fucking singing like songs and holding hands and having one big fucking giant party, okay? But the one thing that I can say with absolute confidence is that there's a number of human miseries that would fucking disappear. The first and most fucking important, I would say, is that you wouldn't have religious fucking douchebags trying to fight against contraception and, you know, that wouldn't be telling people in Africa that condoms help spread AIDS. Mm-hmm. This is a religious idea. You wouldn't have the drug prohibition that we have, so you wouldn't have $1 trillion going to the pockets of evil people.
Child brides, raping of children.
You wouldn't have honor killings. You wouldn't have fucking the cover-up of sexual abuse in all religions, be them Jehovah's Witness, Roman Catholic, Hasidic Jew. Doesn't fucking matter. It's always cover-ups of abuse because it's a fucking old boys club.
Most of the female genital mutilation, a lot of the wealth that the Vatican is sort of hoarding.
Or not even just wealth. Like, imagine some of the things that they have in their treasure chest they don't even fucking want to release. Shit that they've been stealing from the world since the fucking sacking of Alexandria, and it's fucking burning.
Mm-hmm. What about all the tax money that we could now tax specific agencies, and we wouldn't have to worry about all of this government money going towards religious institutions?
Well, that would mean that every person in the United States would suddenly have $1,000 of more income every year, because that's how much of your tax dollars every year are going to religious organizations. It's not just that they're tax exempt. They get money. And that's just in the U.S. I can't even imagine in Britain, where not only are you paying for the fucking House of Lords, but you're paying for faith schools up the ass.
So what we're saying is that while we agree that if religion somehow blinked out of existence tomorrow, not all wars would end globally, but we would have a much, much happier world. We would have an easier place to live in for all kinds of people.
Do you know what the first thing that we would have, finally? Peace in the fucking Middle East.
Yep.
You know, I keep reading and I keep
marriage
linking.
Marriage equality.
I keep linking to articles about the situation in Israel. And it's just it's a horrible theocracy there. It's an ethnocentric theocracy that fears the very citizens that don't share their belief. Like, one of the main reasons why democracy doesn't take hold, why Palestinians can't have a state, is because they just outbreed Jews And because of that, Jews don't want democracy because they're like, well, they're just going to outvote us and we're going to lose this one. So we would rather have a theocracy, a very veiled theocracy, and have some of the most fucking egregious, actions against sort of human rights possible in a place that calls itself liberal. And it's, what a joke. What a fucking joke. That part of the world would suddenly stop being a hotbed. You know what else you'd have? You would have definitely the fact that, say, the area of Kashmir would no longer be a fucking fight between Pakistan and India. The same people who separate themselves due to what? Religion! And they are both nuclear powers, okay?
Would it be able to control some of the international ridiculous population growth that we can't handle?
Yeah, because no one would be saying that condoms were fucking evil, mm-hmm. that contraception was bad because when Onan spilled his semen on the ground, God killed him.
There would be a lot of abandoned churches you and I could buy to turn into really beautiful houses with stained glass windows that were actually scientific images.
You're saying that because of Clyde Tombaugh.
My goodness. There is a stained glass window in a church in, what's his name?
Clyde Tombaugh?
In his hometown.
I don't know his hometown. Now you're really stretching the limits of my fucking memory. It's not his hometown, by the way. It's another
place. It's not.
No, it's the place.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure it's not his hometown because I think it's actually where he moved to, like another small town. But the point is, Clyde Tombaugh discovered Pluto, and he was one of those farm boys who makes good in science kind of things. Of course, like, he's going to be a hero. And there's this beautiful stained glass window in some church, I forget where it was.
Of him and his telescope, and it was inspiring to see it. It just made me want to buy an abandoned church, knock out all the stained glass windows, and put up images of science. He's just beautiful.
I like the way you say knock out. Like, some of these places could have stained glass windows that are 300 years old, and you're like, fuck it!
Fuck it.
It's all bullshit.
It is bullshit.
I'm going to melt down your glass and make something fucking more interesting.
You're not preserving your insanity. Fuck that noise.
Okay, let's move on to the next one. Number 6, atheists have faith the same way that religious people have faith. You're going to hear this a lot. And you know what? Like, I know that Peter Boghossian, who I want to be on the show, has mentioned the fact that he's kind of tired of talking about faith because that's what everybody talks to him about. And he'd rather talk about critical thinking. So I'm going to appease him until we come to the point of just discussing, can you define faith in a way that we stop being accused of having the same faith as religious people? Because personally, it's very insulting.
I think faith is believing in something with no evidence to serve whatever purpose you want.
Well, that's one specific type of faith, right? But another faith could be like a man's faith that his wife will be faithful to him. And if you look at that kind of faith, it's actually based on some kind of evidence, right?
Hmm.
There's reasons for him to believe in that. Because whatever person of authority has told you has had a really good track record. So if your wife has been really good and has not fucking hit on other dudes or been all slutty and shit, you have every reason to have faith in this person. But this faith can easily be displaced, right? They start acting funny. They start hiding things from you. You know, these are things that should cast doubt.
Okay.
But in the religious sense of the word, You can never have doubt, regardless. You've got to keep believing. So this is why faith is actually two conflicting definitions.
So it's either believing in whatever the hell you want without evidence.
Without evidence.
Or believing in something.
Or it's basically the equivalent is trust.
Mm.
Faith is described as both trust and as a belief without any evidence.
Okay, so in terms of atheism being a belief without any evidence, I think, obviously, that's bullshit.
That's obviously wrong.
That's obviously wrong. Because it's a bunch of skeptics. It's a bunch of people saying, I refuse to believe in something that has limited evidence, and there is quite a bit of evidence to suggest that there wouldn't be a God.
Well, you don't even need that. Take a step back, right? You're still looking at it from the fact saying, there's plenty of evidence to prove that there is no God. It's not even necessary, because God is an extraordinary claim, and it requires extraordinary evidence, which is why faith in the religious sense is so necessary, because not only is there no way to prove it, there's plenty of things that would suggest that that's wrong. So it's kind of like that dual
thing. Sort of like
thing.
Physics.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like, okay, here's the thing. With physics, a lot of it is kind of trust, right? I trust that the most recent and modern physics that we have, our understanding of the universe as it is the product of very educated people making lots of, like, attempts to try to uncover this motherfucking mystery. Now, it doesn't mean that, again, like, because I use the word more like trust than I do sort of blind belief, now, if that trust were to erode for whatever reason, and let's say one of my trusts in one of the founding fucking ideas of physics, which is dark matter, is something that I'm beginning to lose a little bit of faith in. Just because every time we try to find some, there is none. And every time a person tries to explain how it could be around, it just seems like we're just placating an idea. Now, I don't have enough anti-faith to say that this is a bad idea or that dark matter should just be rejected and we should move towards a modified theory of gravity. I'm not ready to make that pronunciation. But when I look at my own belief about how the universe is formed, I realize that it is basically contingent on this kind of trust, which itself is open to being refuted.
Well, I suppose if you look at faith in that way, then we have to have a bit of faith every day. We have to have a bit of faith to assume, we wake up assuming gravity is going to work the same every day. We have faith in believing that the sun will rise, but it's not the same. It's faith based on evidence.
It's faith with a small f, and they believe in faith with a big f. And this is why they can actually make that accusation. It's not difficult for us to counter it. It's just lengthy. It requires a person to understand that there are certain words that have many meanings. And unfortunately, it's one of those things where the two different meanings can apply to us.
So atheists, the way we could argue it is that atheists do not ascribe to faith in the same way that religious people refer to faith.
Absolutely.
In the religious meaning of faith.
But now sit down a religious person and try to explain to them that distinction, it's not going to happen. They're not going to see that as any distinction whatsoever because they believe that their faith is actually similar to ours.
But that's disturbing.
Yeah, no, it is disturbing because they actually think that they are open-minded, that they think that they probably even believe that to some degree, that given enough evidence, they might not even believe. Most of those people don't seek out evidence. They just, whenever they're presented with some contradictory evidence, they will run towards any apologetic that can give them a satisfactory answer to that objection. And I remember like a classic story of that was, do you remember a few years ago, I mentioned in one of my podcasts that there were Jehovah's Witnesses that were showing up at my door?
Oh, yes, yes.
And I kept on asking them questions, and they had to come back with the answers. And one of the questions that I asked was, can you explain to me the two different versions of Judas's death? Because there's, in one version, he's standing in his field that he has basically bought with the ill-gotten gains, the 30 pieces of silver that he got for betraying Jesus. And in the middle of the field, God eviscerates his fucking stomach and his guts spill out and he dies. In the second version, he feels guilty for what he did and he hangs himself. These are two fucking very different stories.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple weeks later, after I gave him that challenge, a guy came back and he had an answer for it. You want to know what the answer was?
Shoot.
Okay. It's so fucking stupid. Basically said that he hung himself near the edge of a cliff and the branch broke and the sharp rocks split his stomach open. This is apparently, in their eyes, an adequate explanation to what are two different stories. And that have two different meanings, right? Like, you know, and I was even diplomatic about my answer because I knew they didn't want to hear my real answer. I said, look, sometimes maybe a story is so important that you have to say it multiple ways because there's not just one lesson to learn from it, right? There's kind of like, you know, one story is about revenge. The other story is about guilt and, maybe in a weird sixth sense, admonishment. But whatever. I'm like, I could appreciate if you were just looking at it from a allegorical sense that it's written to try to, you know, to try to explain what would be the actions of a person who had these kinds of ill-gotten gains. But trying to answer both of these questions by making a third statement would makes no fucking sense is not an answer. But in their view, that probably is like, well, I found an apologetics who answered my question, therefore I can still have trust in the source material. And that just goes to demonstrate the fact that maybe for them it might be similar to our version of trust, but it isn't. It really isn't. It has no opportunity to be wrong.
Okay, let's move on. Okay, so what are we looking at for our last one? Or how far are we down the list?
We're number 7.
Okay, so which ones have we done?
We've done atheism as a religion. Atheists are undereducated about religion. Atheists are arrogant. Atheists are Satanists. Atheists should acknowledge the importance of religion. And atheists have faith.
Okay, next.
All right, next is atheists have no morality.
This one's offensive. This one's a hard one because it's not only is it incorrect, but it also dehumanizes atheists in the eyes of religious people. You know, if you don't have any morality, if you can't do any good, how can you be human? And that, I think that's what pisses me off about this particular statement the most. It's just like, what?
It's true. It does dehumanize us. But the where it comes from actually is because most religious people believe that morality is only possible when you have some kind of authority that can definitively give you an objective moral sense. So in most religions, they'll say, well, the height of all of our morality, the source of all of our morality, for instance, is God. And they'll give God a number of attributes, and they'll say that because of these attributes and because of God's moral, because he's a moral framework to work with, that you could use this to actually try to prove different moral precepts that would otherwise not necessarily, that would otherwise be subjective rather than objective. Sam Harris's book, The Moral Landscape, is actually his attempt to try to refute this, right? The idea that, no, actually you can create a scientific view of the world that still has objective morality. Now, some people could argue whether or not he actually achieved this. I have yet to read his book, so I don't actually want to talk too much about his stance. But all I can say, at least about the stance that, you know, you need a God in order to have some form of objective morality, is you run into so many problems, especially with, say, Yahweh as a God, that he cannot give you a proper moral framework. Because if you were to try to use Yahweh as a good example, number one, it's fine to commit genocide.
It's fine to sell your daughters into slavery.
It's fine to fucking marry or force your daughter to marry her rapist if you've never had sex before.
It's fine to beat your wife.
It's fine to beat your slaves.
It's pretty scary. It's fine to have slaves.
Yeah, it's fine
as long
to
as
have
you keep them in a certain way.
Yeah, like the problem with Yahweh being but on a broader sense, the thing is that most religious people are like, well, God is the ultimate source of good. So whatever that means that whatever God says is good. But now you're running into a problem because so much of what God says is either contradictory or from even the very simple point of view, evil.
Mm-hmm.
Very evil. And you're saying, well, it's good because God said it was good. And now this I feel is a much more disturbing problem, one that religious people don't really have to think about, because they live in a world which is actually the product of lots of other, you know, moral systems that are not based on religion. I mean, how much do you think our moral framework in our modern society is actually based on religion? I would say very little. I mean, we are a product, right? At least this society is a product of the Enlightenment Age, and Enlightenment thinkers were not very religious for a reason.
Well, I think we could also say that a lot of the decisions that religious groups have made about which principles in their religious texts to observe and which to bury has to do with modern morality.
Well, they have no choice. I mean, the great thing about Christianity, the reason why it survived, is because it's very adaptive. I mean, a classic example is in the early days of Christianity, where Paul of Tarsus is trying to spread the religion to the Gentiles. He decides that they're going to do away with circumcision. Perhaps the smartest fucking idea that any religion has come up with.
You mean male genital mutilation?
Yeah, exactly. Male genital mutilation. Thank you, Carissa, for fucking framing it.
I'm really not comfortable calling it circumcision because it makes it sound like it's just a normal thing.
Or something.
It's not.
You don't even want to know what percentage of young adult males in the United States get mutilated, even if they're not religious. It's almost half.
It's creepy.
It's really quite creepy.
It's creepy. It's creepy that it's something that we do before the child can consent to it. You know?
Not only that, but when a child is hypersensitive to pain.
Well, and like, just think about it this way. What if you were given a tattoo or a piercing of some kind as a child, we would consider that child abuse.
Yeah, we consider it branding.
It's how exactly is body modification, is male genital mutilation something that we don't have a larger, wider conversation about? It's weird. It's a weird thing we still do as a culture. It's a weird thing that reminds me that atheism is still very important.
Well, you know what? There is a portion of it that's actually... I would say that a lot of young mothers push for it rather than young fathers. It's because a lot of young women feel that an uncircumcised penis looks strange. They don't like the cap
on top.
Well,
it does if you've never seen one before.
No, but that's the important thing. That's the big distinction. Yeah, you're right, it does. But people tend to just do what's familiar. So if you come from a culture where a lot of people circumcise their kids and you're uncircumcised, you know, even some, I've heard some justification saying, I don't want my kid to be in gym class taking a shower and be different from everybody else. Because that's how pervasive it is.
Somebody should stand up and have like a fullness of male penis pride thing. So it's like, I have a whole penis. My penis was not mutilated at birth. I'm proud of that.
Well, there is a movement of men that try to get their foreskin back. And it is possible, actually.
To
using weights.
It?
Yeah. Using weights and that kind of stuff to get your foreskin back. So there is that movement. But, you know, like I said, because it is still such a common procedure, and you know, I hate to sort of, like, put on the tinfoil hat here, but, you know, with doctors trying, in a society where doctors are a for-profit institution, you can make money on circumcising someone. You're just going to make more money. You can charge for that.
Ugh, blech, blech. Gross.
Yeah. So many fucking areas.
I mean, I don't want to put men down. If you have a circumcised penis, you don't have any control of that. And I do, to an extent, understand the plights of parents who are contemplating it and do decide to go for it. But from where I sit, it's a weird, creepy North American creepiness that...
I consider it violence. Blech. I consider it violence in every degree. Male or female, it is a form of violence. Leave the genitalia alone, people.
Stop.
It works fine.
Mutating the genitalia of babies.
But we're the ones who lack morality.
Not okay. Yeah, yeah.
You know, to wrap this point up, I don't think that you can actually have any morality that isn't to some degree subjective. Because I would disagree with Sam Harris in saying, like, there may be certain things that are subjective that you might not be able to prove are objectively true. But I view morality as like a toolbox, right? And you could use a hammer to try to fix every problem, but it's not going to be the best tool. And some tools are much more sophisticated than others. We have a tool set, a moral toolbox that is way more sophisticated than our, you know, 16th, 14th, or 13th century fucking brethren.
And although I can't really think of any examples right now, which makes this argument terrible, there is sometimes when, you know, that thing morally that we feel where we're like, ooh, that's icky, which is kind of like our natural morality. Sometimes that's wrong.
It is wrong.
You know, I mean...
Well, homosexuality is a good example of that.
Right, right. Where some people feel like, oh, that's just icky, and their moral center kind of acts up. But I mean, if you think about it intellectually, you just realize that the marriage equality is important. It's important for all people to have the same rights.
Well, you have to realize that feelings about something might actually be more due to, you know, sort of like the way that your brain functions. Like, if you're heterosexual and you think that butt sex is icky, it might just be because this is an important psychological factor in order for you to be hetero.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you need to reject certain forms of sexuality. And sometimes even sort of like, you know, strongly, because the truth is we're all a little bit gay. It just really depends. And a good example of that
is
if
you're about
like,
Kinsey's. I don't know, is it Kinsey's 1 or Kinsey's 7?
Kinsey's has a scale, yeah. I don't know where I would fit in that scale.
You don't know where you fit in the scale?
No, I don't know. I'll say is that I've always detested any porn with a flaccid dick.
Huh.
I like hard dick fucking things. Because I feel like if it's flaccid, there's no intensity, there's no whatevers. And that makes me a little gay, and I'm cool with that.
This is the special information you guys get on the bonus podcast, just so you know.
Only on the bonus podcast.
Only on the
bonus
podcast.
Knowing what degree of gay Jacob is. And I'm sure there's some gay fans who wish, could you be a little bit more gay, Jake?
He's mine. Back off, guys. I know you could win him away from me if you tried hard enough, so don't try.
Get the fuck out of here. Who's going to win me away from you?
Aw, that's sweet.
Only on the bonus podcast am I this sweet. Okay, number eight, atheists are unhappy and angry at God.
I'm unhappy right now. Because of our lack of internet. Not because I'm angry at God. You know, I think that comes from a very narrow perspective where religious people assume that there is no existence without God. So if you don't have God, they buy into that whole idea that without God, you are lonely and mad at him. But, I mean, the idea to be mad at God is to assume that we still believe in him, which is not what atheism is. Atheism's like, oh, guess what? That shit is insane, and I do not have the stamina to believe in that nonsense anymore.
I could believe that anti-theists, who are not necessarily non-believers, or if they are non-believers, they may have come to that conclusion from, say, a position of anger. That might be possible. Like, let's use Darwin as a perfect fucking example, right? Darwin is a believer for most of his life. Now, he begins to question it because of science, among other things, but there is one event that essentially completely erodes his faith, is when his beloved daughter dies.
Oof.
And, you know, having sort of come up with the idea of evolution, he understands why she died is because he married his cousin, his first cousin. And knowing, even though we didn't have the modern science of genetic, he could intuitively understand that the closer you were in your own lineage, the more likely you were to have unhealthy or weak offspring. So he understood where that came from. And I won't deny that maybe some part of him was angry, maybe even originally at first, at a god, or if there was a possibility. Because you have to remember, back then, even declaring you were agnostic was a big deal. That you had doubts, you know? That's a big deal. But he dies an atheist, and part of it is his anger. And I think that there are some anti-theists out there that identify themselves as atheists, but I would say anti-theist would probably be a closer, nomenclature for them, where they come to their position because they've been sold a bill of goods in terms of their religion. Like, God is all loving, which is like the worst thing you could ever say to a person, because he's not. I'm like, I'm sorry. Can you prove to me and show me in one biblical verse this all loving nature? No, I don't think so. Yeah. Not really all loving. But this is the way that some people have decided to define him, because he has to be all of everything, I guess. But still, some anti-theists, yeah, sure, maybe they're mad at God. But I'm saying that if you are one of those people, you need to take one further step here. You're angry at nothing. You're angry at forces of the universe, which didn't end up working in your favor. You know, when we think about even our own situation, my darling, like, some of the things that we have to think about is, like, anything we're unhappy about, you know, anything that comes, like, our way and we're just like, oh, that was shitty, or this happened, this was crappy. Well, it's just because, you know, our world is still just a manifestation of physical properties that manifest themselves, you know? And, like, we may be angry at some of those because they don't work out in our favor, but there was no thought behind it. Just cold-ass physics. And in sometimes human nature that we can't change. But whatever. Regardless, like, if you're still mad, then you haven't really understood just, you know, the real nature of the universe. It is uncaring. But that's okay. You don't need a caring universe to fucking live in. Just turns out that the way that physics works is that you can actually have a peaceful, wonderful, beautiful environment, because it all works out that way. Nobody is fucking turning the dials, and you don't need to be mad if a rock crushed your friend. It was gravity acting on that rock that killed your buddy.
I'm sure you're still going to be angry, but you have no one to direct that
anger. You have no one to direct it at. Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry, guys.
It was just fucking gravity that killed your buddy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of, like, there was a couple in Montreal a couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago. They were having a... they went to a sushi restaurant downtown where the man proposed to his wife, and they went there for their wedding anniversary. And while they were there,
they were sitting in the same table where
they proposed. The same table where they proposed. While they were there, a chunk of the building fell off and crushed his wife and killed her instantly. And actually even removed three of his fingers that was touching her. Obviously, that piece of building was after her. Anyways, that's just gravity, you know? It's not a malicious force. It's just that eventually the glue or the cement that held that collapsed. Because that's pretty much Montreal now.
Ugh.
It's a giant collapsing city.
Is it different for you coming here and like seeing Montreal has all this ancient architecture and all? Like, I feel like Montreal feels like it's being held together with paste, whereas in Calgary, out our window, we can see three cranes right now.
Oh yeah, giant cranes.
Because I mean, Calgary is nothing but like, you know, mirrored sides of buildings and fancy new high-rises.
It is different when it's new. But you know. Any of my complaints I'm not actually going to mention because it would feel like a slight on the city.
Right.
I don't have any sort of thing negative because I actually left Montreal with a negative view. But regardless, this couple, they have no one to blame, right? They have only the physical laws to blame, and that's all. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you're mad at God, then, again, you've misunderstood the fact that nature is cruel, but it is the crucible in which you were born.
Mm-hmm.
So you're born into a cruel world, and it is up to you,
but
by the way, to make sure it's not as cruel as it could physically be.
And at least you got to be born.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I'm a lucky son of a bitch. I beat out 250 million of my other potential brethren in the one act of copulation that led to my conception.
I beat out that and several other factors because I was a teenage pregnancy. I fought through contraception.
Well,
I really
my
wanted
mother,
to exist.
Was my mother a teenager? No, she had just reached 20, so I was not a teenage pregnancy. Mm-hmm. I was a second child, so by then...
Middle child.
The middle child, yeah. Seriously.
All right, let's move on.
Okay, let's move on to number 9, second to last.
Yay!
Which is to say, oh God, this one. This one's going to piss off so many people. Atheist regimes are responsible for more deaths than religion.
Okay, so let's first define what people are talking about. Now, do they mean, like, that regimes that have had no particular inclination to any specific religion have been, rather than what they're saying is atheist regimes, because they're not atheist regimes, they're just regimes that aren't inclined to any particular religion, are responsible for more deaths than, I don't know, the Inquisition or things such as this? Is that what they're trying to argue for?
Well, this is tough, because here we go back to point number 5, which is to say that a world without religion is a more violent place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, imagine you have a state that declares itself as not religious. What happens if that state commits evils, right? Now, you know, like the Soviet Union is the state that most people will just tend to focus on. Some try to focus on Nazi Germany, even though that's a mistake, because there's way more evidence to suggest that it is a religious cult more than anything else. But we'll just focus on the Soviet Union because, you know, under Stalin, there are more Russians died under that man than the Second World War, okay? Just brutal, from a number of things. One was their obsession with centralized planning, centralized economies, which I'm sorry to say are deadly, okay? When a government decides how many fucking ears of corn you should grow, that's a fucking invitation to starvation, okay? But more than this, too, is that anyone who opposed him, like, let's say, I don't know, the Ukraine or fucking anybody else, will just get obliterated. And there's something like 22 million Russians that died under that man's fucking regime. And he was an atheist. But if that regime had been religious, right, had been a theocracy, we wouldn't really have blamed the religion itself. Because that's not what people do. You know, when the Serbs, the Croats, were fighting nobody really called them Orthodox, mm-hmm. or, you know, sort of like Catholic, or, you know,
or
Islamic.
Any of the wars that any state that is religiously inclined has ever been through. The only
right.
wars that we call religious wars are wars that are waged
specifically religious.
For religious purposes, absolutely.
Right. So this is the first problem, right? So they'll say, well, it's an atheistic regime, which I won't deny, because it, you know, officially they rejected religion. And in some sense, too, I think that I would say that some acts of terror and abuse were actually caused by the pushback against religion.
Hmm.
But you do have to understand that at the time, you know, the Orthodox Church in the Soviet Union had a lot of power. And the only way to gain power is to remove violently the men who hold power. These are power struggles. And yes, I don't believe they were fought on ideological lines more than they were fought on political lines. Now, this is still, by the way, the argument that's used against religion, against conflicts that are religious. So maybe I don't want to even use that argument. But it's irrelevant. If a person tells me that there are more, you know, like the death toll was always higher for atheist regimes, the truth is that no, it was not. Because you can't just look at the numbers. You have to look at the real percentages, right? Like if you live in a world where 100 million people exist and say, you know, 5 million people get killed, but you live in a world with 7 billion and 1 million people get killed, that's a really different percentage. And that's what's really important. You have to look at the per capita. You have to look at the distribution of the population. You have to take those factors into account. The best book that you could read about that is from Steven Pinker's Angels of a Better Nature, which is, you know, I'm still sucking his dick now. How long has it been since I read that book and I'm still blowing him?
Mm-hmm.
Ridiculous. Anyways, he mentions the fact that if you looked at sort of the 13 of the worst genocides known to man relative to the percentage of the population, we still, you know, like even an atheistic regime like the Soviet Union really doesn't fit into that. It's just because by the time they were around, there were so many people. So many. And those numbers, even though they're disastrous and, you know, like scary to us, are just a fraction of the percentage that, you know, like in the old days, during the days of the Crusades or even before then, where religious conflicts could seriously impact the percentage of the population. So great was their own fucking genocide. And you have to also look at the brutality of it. Like, if you ever read anything about the Crusades, you would read stories that would chill you to the bone. Like, the Crusaders themselves, like
pulling out people's guts.
Not just the brutality of what they did, but even what they were like. Like, they're because they were out in the sun for so long and surrounded by, like, kind of, like, bacteria and disease from all the killing, they looked like monsters. Their faces puffed up and just full of gangrene and all these other fucking... They look like monsters, sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
They look like fucking monsters. And there are some stories of, like, some cities running so fucking red with blood that the horses themselves were covered up to the top with just, you know, stained with the blood of the innocent people that, you know, were slaughtered. And this is a very different form of violence that it was, you know, that any non-religious regime can claim to have. Like the you know, it's just that you have to understand that when you believe in a, you know, a religion that itself is antithetical towards any other faith, the reaction to that is stated very specifically. They're your enemies. You must kill them. You must slaughter them. And we live in a world where that's not the case. But it could be. It could be again. And I'll tell you one thing. If there was an atheistic regime that popped up tomorrow, I don't think it would be that same thing. Because Stalin, it was a cult personality, folks. It was very much religion in its own right.
All right, last one.
Okay, last one. This one's weird. But I hear it all the time, is that apparently atheists are hopeless about the future. Apparently we have no hope. Because you can only have hope if you wish to invisible sky man.
Yeah, I think I'm going to leave this one up to you because the rant you had earlier about death cults was really funny.
Okay, here's my opinion about this. I feel that it is a tremendous irony, especially seeing as how this is usually what very religious people will actually accuse us of, is of saying, oh, you have no hope. How can you have hope without God? And the funny thing is that religious people, like most Christians in this world, they don't really have hope about the future the same way that you and I do. We have hope about the future for different reasons, but for a Christian, he hopes that Jesus will come back and destroy the vast majority of the population, like with a sword, right? The imagery of the book of Revelation is clear. Jesus comes back with a sword. People lose their heads. There is essentially a wine press of blood pouring out until it's just sort of up to your neck. This is a fantasy about the end of the world. And I, you know, like some fucking skeptic could say, oh, it's only a small minority of people that believe in that. No, 40% of Americans believe in that. Well, they hope for that within their lifetime.
That is terrifying. But I also think that there's another element to this, wherein that atheists tend to be more aware of what's going on in the world. They don't bury their heads in the sand as much as religious people do, because for us, the nature of reality is very real, right? I mean, when we hear about these environmental issues or these wars or all this stuff, they scare the crap out of us because we recognize that these are man-made phenomena. These are things that we need to be concerned about and that we're the only ones who can fix. Whereas religious people, oh, well, you know, God put that challenge there because he knew that we could handle it. No! We can't handle it! We don't know! We're trying really hard and there was this great comment I read that said, you know, the optimist and the pessimist have one thing in common, where the pessimist says, oh my God, there's no fixing this, let's not do anything. And the optimist will sometimes say, oh yeah, that'll be easy to fix, let's not do anything. Still nothing gets done.
And you know what the truth is? I actually think that is very insulting, because most of the non-believers that I know, they do have a lot of hope about the future. I mean, why else would they be fucking passionate about it? Why else would they be fighting for the fucking civil rights of gay people? Why else would they be fighting for the rights of other non-believers in countries where you get executed or jailed for declaring there is no God? We hope that that's not going to be the future.
But I think what I'm trying to say is that we do more than hope, right? I don't think hope is enough.
True.
I'm really grateful for all those people who hope things all the time. But if they're not doing fucking anything, then they're no use to me. And they're no use to any of us. Hope is not that useful of a thing. And I hate that we've glorified it. Yes, great. It's good for everybody to be happy. Get off your ass and fucking make a difference. Seriously.
That's true. I mean, like, I've said this before. This is why everyone who knows me knows that I really rail against the agnostics. I do. Because I view them as just sort of like the hopeful bunch that do nothing. I'm not interested in a person that does nothing. I'm interested in the movers, the shakers, the ones that put themselves before a fucking cause. Yeah, that put themselves before a cause and say, I care about this enough that I'm going to say something. And just going back to, you know, Illinois and all those people that could have pushed that, you know, sort of anti-bullying bill forward, but they didn't because they were afraid that somehow as part of the gay agenda. And there was a, you know, half of them decided to abstain from voting. You're the problem, abstainer. You were the fucking problem. You fill me with hopelessness. Because I'm like, how can I convince the rest of the logical people that they need to fucking do something if they're like, I don't want to be forced to take a position? Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. I realize that you don't want to be forced to do anything. But this is life. You're forced to labor for your food. You are forced to fucking work to live. You are forced to do everything. if you want to live in a world where you're forced to do nothing, build a fucking spaceship and go out into space and meet no other human beings. Because that's the only way they will not force you to take a position on an opinion on things. Pick a fucking side, you weakling. You make me sick. Of course, I say this to the bonus members who are probably all believers.
Yep.
What a waste.
Yep. What a waste.
Well, this one's going to be free, though, because I've been putting a whole bunch of shows behind lock and key as I've been uploading a lot of the missing bonus shows. And guess what? By probably tomorrow or Saturday, every single bonus show will now be available. I downloaded all of them. It's happening. I'm working real hard to make sure that I'm giving you the product that you're paying for, people. That's my promise to you.
You will get what you paid for. Wow, that's a huge promise, Jacob.
Yeah, but you know, you have to realize that a person who pays $20 is not just paying for all the backlog of shows. They're paying for, like, shows for the next year.
That's true. That's true.
So I've been kind of like, I'm busting my ass every fucking day for you motherfuckers.
Okay, so before we go, we should recap. Too much drink units.
I know, and apparently I'm breaking out because of this fucking drink that we have.
Yeah, your face is...
I have an allergic reaction now, apparently, to this drink that we have.
We've been drinking this stuff called... this is not sponsored,
give me more, though,
by the way. It's called BC Original Cider, yeah. Growers Cider.
I was drinking this in, actually, Prince Albert's, and I was breaking out, actually, physically, like, hives. Is that the best way to describe it? Hives?
It's like a red, yeah. Hives, I feel like if we tell people it's hives, they're going to think, like, blotchy little spots.
But it's not really blotchy.
It's not, it's your whole face is, like, puffy and red.
Yeah. Well,
the
only time I've ever actually seen this was from some of my Asian friends that are allergic to alcohol. So the truth is, whatever alcohol is in this, I may be allergic to.
Yeah, because I was reading the ingredients. As I saw you breaking out, I was reading the ingredients, and there doesn't seem to be much in here.
It's true, and I've gotten drunk many times, so it's not... There are many forms of alcohol that I'm not fucking allergic to, but apparently this one has it.
So, just so you know, if you've noticed, I've been a little distracted through the shows, because slowly but surely... Jacob's face is
getting red.
Been inflating and reddening.
You see what I do for you people? Drinking this in order to be in show mode. Meanwhile, I'm dying. I'm dying from my allergic reaction to this shit. Okay, I'm not really dying.
Yeah, you could also just choose not to drink this.
Well, I can't do shows without some form of drug. I'm sorry to admit that every show you've ever listened to, I've been on some form of drug.
No, there are a collection of sober shows. There are.
What, in the early ones?
Yeah.
They're unlistenable.
There's some late ones, too.
When?
When we didn't have anything.
Oh, my God. I hate those shows. The Dominican Republic shows, before I was able to kind of, like, get somebody to give me some drugs, were awful. And I was drinking... No, that's not true. I was drinking plenty of booze back then.
You were drinking so much. In the Dominican, at one point you scared me.
Really?
How much? Yeah, a little bit. There was one week where you were, because beers in the Dominican are these huge bottles.
They're massive.
So Jake stopped having the best time at controlling his intake because, you know, when the bottle size is, you know, normally when you drink in North America, you're like, oh, I had three bottles, I'm good. But there, a bottle is like 2.5 beers, if not more. And you were going through quite a few of those for what? There was one week where you were quite... You were quite drunk.
I always drink more when I don't have weed. That is the honest truth.
You shouldn't be admitting these things.
No, I will.
In a recording.
It's the bonus show.
Don't come arrest him.
You don't arrest someone from admitting that they had weed.
At some point in their life.
Exactly.
Okay,
you can't do that.
All right, good. Aren't you just worried me? You're just worrying me.
I worry you now because I have fucking... I'm breaking out.
All right, so today's show was...
brought to you by the letter L.
Brought to you by the letter L. For for lame...
Lush.
For lush. I was going to say for a lame-ass apartment setup. Still.
Oh, my God. Sweetie, we need to get you fucking stuff because you were obsessing about this, aren't you?
Now,
without the internet, you obsess about something, and your obsession now is sort of like furniture.
All I need is a bed and a desk. It doesn't seem unreasonable. It doesn't.
It doesn't. We'll get those. We're just sort of slow on the intake.
Yeah.
We're going to get
it. It's also hard because we don't have a vehicle. All right. So which topics did we cover? Just as a recap.
Okay. So we're going to go through the 10 that we covered because apparently Chris is forcing me to tell you. And by the way, if any of you feel like you already memorized these and it's just obnoxious, please write to CarissaHendricks at gmail.com.
I think it's good for people to know what we covered.
Whatever. Send your fucking comments to CarissaHendricks at gmail.com. So to recap, number one, atheism is a religion. Number two, atheists are undereducated or uneducated about religion. Number three, atheists are arrogant. Number four, atheists are Satanists. Number five, atheists should acknowledge that the world is a better place with religion. Number six, atheists have faith. Same way that religious people do. Number seven, atheists have no morality. Number eight, atheists are unhappy and angry at God. Number nine, atheist regimes are responsible for more deaths than religious ones. And finally, religious are hopeless about the future.
So any time in future when you're on the internet, you're surfing around, you see religious people with their bullshit propaganda trying to continue one of these false ideas.
Tropes.
These ridiculous pieces of fucking bullshit, then you will be able to re-listen to the show and bask in the comfort of realizing that these people are morons and you're not the only person who thinks it. We all think it because it's true. So,
and Jacob told you so.
And Jacob told you so.
And you feel better about it. And that's why you paid for the bonus shows.
I hope you guys got that out of the show.
Well, fucking A, I hope so too. So before we leave, I'd like to thank everybody who's a contributing member. Be you regular member or hardcores, although I will admit that if you're hardcore, I love you more because you actually have really done more than most regular members. Not to denigrate you regulars. I still appreciate the regulars.
I appreciate them all. No, I am grateful for all of them.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I love the hardcores more. They're just more hardcore. And of course,
I don't have favorites.
Think about me. Would I love the fucking softcore or the hardcores more? I'm hardcore myself. I will love those of you that are dedicated enough to tithe me $5 a fucking month. Lo and behold, I like your commitment. I think it's sexy. Okay, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Chrissa Hendricks.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.